And you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA, on St. Patrick's Week. And coming up on Easter, we are delighted, indeed, as we always are, to welcome tourism, Ireland, North America, and Canada, of course, which is included in North America, headed up by our guest, Alison Metcalf. You're very welcome.
Thanks, Adrian. Always great to be here.
The traffic, much of it having to do this week with the tremendous number of Americans heading for Ireland and to be part of the Irish festivities over there.
Exactly. There's never been a better week to be in Ireland than St. Patrick's Week. Obviously, a lot happens here across North America, but there's no better place to be than whether you're in Dublin for the week-long festival or up in Downpatrick to see where St. Patrick is buried, yeah. Visiting many of the attractions. And there are parades and festivals all around the country. So this is a great time to be there. It's the start of our early spring travel period, a great time to go. And when we look at the numbers and the number of North Americans traveling in March now to Ireland, it continues to grow, it continues to increase. It's a great time to be there. The weather is spring-like, and it's great value too.
It has to be good for tourism also, for people, and again, the parades, which are relatively new, the whole concept of St. Patrick's Day and parades and everything that goes with it, many would say, they was stolen from North America, couldn't ignore it anymore.
I think so. I think everybody recognises this fantastic opportunity to celebrate all that is great about Ireland, wherever you are on the island of Ireland,
yeah.
And whether it's through festival, through music, through theatre, through dance, or through a parade, there's lots happening. And obviously, it's a national holiday, so everybody wants to be out doing something. And I think the parades are different to what you see here in North America. Often they have less floats and they're more about, the creative and the performing arts. But they vary from town to town. But I think the main thing is that everybody gets out there and celebrates what is great about Ireland.
And, of course, there is no such thing as one-way traffic in the tourism business, because obviously a lot of Irish people are energized by seeing the activity that is taking place.
They are, and I think if you're visiting, it's great to enjoy a lot of the activities with locals. And I think for us, it's an opportunity, certainly here in North America, to capitalize on Ireland's national holidays, celebrating St. Patrick. And I think there are many destinations out there would love to have the attention that we have on March the 17th. So
yeah.
Here at Tourism Ireland, we want to try and link St. Patrick's Day as much as we can to travel. We want to invite people across North America to visit Ireland, whether they travel for St. Patrick's Day, whether they travel at another time of the year. And we hope that what they see in Ireland and here in North America represents the best of what Ireland has to offer.
What effect, or does it have an effect on tourism, that St. Patrick's Week, and we're just shaking off the green when here we are with Easter, an early Easter. Does that affect tourism?
Well, certainly the Easter holidays are always good for travel. I think people have time off. So this year it is very early. So it could certainly affect our numbers in April if people are going to be traveling towards the end of March. But certainly it's a time for family, so people do travel at Easter. They take some time off. So we would expect the month of March to be a very strong month for us. But as we head into April, it is springtime. It's still a relatively strong travel period for us. So, these things come swings and roundabouts every year. Sometimes it's in April, sometimes it's in March, but we usually capitalize on the holiday period.
How are the new routes, the new flights to Ireland, how are those bookings?
Forward bookings are looking pretty good in terms of talking to all of the carriers that serve Ireland. If we look at the US, there's 12 gateways, and we're going to have a lot of new capacity this year, new services being operated by Aer Lingus from Los Angeles starting at the beginning of May.
Mm-hmm.
And then later in the year, you'll see two more services coming on from Hartford, Connecticut, Bradley, and also from Newark, operated by Aer Lingus. And then when we look at all of the US carriers, With, I think all of them have added capacity in terms of either through increased frequency or with putting bigger aircraft on those routes. So things are looking good. This year has got off to a good start. I think people recognize that the dollar is certainly very strong. The value in Ireland is, right, is still excellent when you can compare it with some of our European other European destinations. And I think more than anything else, the vacation experience on the ground is second to none. And that's primarily why people are, yes, traveling. It helps that airfares are reasonable and there's value on the ground, but people are going for a vacation and they want to enjoy unique and authentic and memorable experiences.
Is there a change in pattern recently about the attractions, the traditional attractions that have been greatly expanded?
I think what we've seen on the ground is that we've seen a terrific investment in the vacation experiences, or in the product, as they say, in the industry, but in making sure that some of the experiences that are on offer are the best that they can be. And I think if we look at three of those big vacation experiences, the Wild Atlantic Way is the world's longest defined coastal route, and the experiences that have been brought to life along the West Coast are second to none. Launching this year is Ireland's Ancient East, again, looking to bring some of Europe's history to life. I mean, you've got 5,000 years of European history stretching all the way down from, you know, Wicklow all the way down to Cork. And then, of course, Dublin and Northern Ireland as well. We're investing significant amounts of money in those experiences. And I think what people want is they want to get engaged in things. They want to learn. They want to interact as opposed to just sort of viewing things and seeing things from a passive perspective. So there's lots of ways to get involved. Food tourism, screen tourism, look at the movies that have been filmed in Ireland recently.
God, yes.
People want to sort of connect with people, but also with the landscape and the culture. And I think when you look at Ireland's Wild Atlantic Way, you look at the Ancient East, you look at Northern Ireland, all of those more experiential types of attractions and things to do and see are there.
Has the Wild Atlantic Way and the very successful campaign, which was indeed accommodated tremendously by the signage, by the concentration on the Wild Atlantic Way, where tourists would see that actually it's not just a route on a map, but that the entire Wild Atlantic Way, they got the falsehood. They got that. They had that awareness that wherever you went on there, they were expected, and it wasn't. They weren't left to their own devices.
No, I think so. I think what the Wild Atlantic Way has done is, as you said, it goes beyond the signage. I mean, the coastal route was always there. What has happened is that there's been a tremendous amount of engagement from locals on the ground, and not just the traditional tourism providers, the hotels and the attractions, but I think communities have got involved. So whether some of the bigger attractions like the Cliffs of Moher and like the Ring of Kerry, they were always popular attractions. I think what the Wild Atlantic Way has done is actually extended and built awareness for particularly for attractions north of Galway. So it's pulling more traffic into the west and the northwest, which didn't have the same kind of traffic flows as the southwest of the country. I think it's what it's also done is it's brought other providers that perhaps they didn't realize they were in tourism into the tourism business. So culinary tours, musical tours, if you want to learn Irish language, you want to golf along the Wild Atlantic. Everybody who is in the business now is very proud to say we are located on the Wild Atlantic Way. So it's really unified that coastal route. And I think when people travel anywhere in the world, people love driving routes. And this is a great opportunity to explore one of the world's greatest, not only the longest, one of the world's greatest and most rugged coastlines. So that is certainly working extremely well.
And the extension of the Wild Atlantic Way, without the emphasis, that northern, the coastline route, that has it has really increased in terms, of the facilities, the attraction. I mean, somebody in the north might say, "Well, listen, we did our bit," and in fact, if you take the coastal route from the Wild Atlantic Way and take that coastal route around Northern Ireland. That is
absolutely
amazing.
If you're travelling up the Wild Atlantic Way, up around Donegal, come around into the city of Derry, Londonderry, and then you continue on to the Causeway Coastal Route. So for anybody interested in coastal scenery, they must absolutely take in the Causeway Coastal Route. City of Derry, the only completely walled city in Europe. Along the Causeway Coastal Route, you'll find attractions such as, obviously, the Giant's Causeway, the Carrickery Rope Bridge, Dunluce Castle. You'll find many of the sites that will reminiscent of, if you're a Game of Thrones fan, many of the locations were filmed along the Causeway Coastal Route, as well as down in County Down, and then carry on around down through the Nine Glens of Antrim into Belfast. So it's a 60 to 80 mile coastal route, stunning scenery. So we really don't make the distinction. I mean, the Wild Atlantic Way connects with the Causeway Coastal Route, but for visitors, it's all about touring around the coast of Ireland, and they continue onto the Causeway Coastal Route.
How do you market Ireland's ancient East? Very easy to look at the coastal routes, and we know and so forth, but Ireland's ancient East takes a tremendous amount, first of all, in area, and are there special tours, are there special leanings towards specific sites?
Well, as you rightly say, Adrian, it's not a route. I think the way we describe Ireland's ancient East, I mean, it's clusters of built heritage, and I think the interesting thing about the East is about the stories. So whether you're interested in ancient history, if you look at Newgrange, I mean, I think people will be surprised to hear that Newgrange is older than the pyramids, so that's unique in of itself. And again, if you're interested in great houses and gardens, look at Castle Town House, look at Powers Court House and Gardens. Early Christian heritage. Again, look at Glendalough and Clonmacnoise. So I think what we're trying to do there is develop key experiences. So the Viking triangle in Waterford, look at medieval history around Kilkenny. Anchor some of those stories around certain periods of history, but it's not about a history lesson, it's about using some of the stories and the characters to bring it to life. So essentially what we're saying to people is, if you're interested in a certain period of history or a particular area, take in a few of the key attractions, but then there's so much more around. So we're putting together itineraries which will span around 50 mile radius from some of those iconic attractions like Kilkenny Castle, for example, and the Medieval Mile, and then spanning out from there. But it's doing it in a way that is fun, and it's not too heavy on the history.
Tell us, if you will, about the greening and the greening initiative of St. Patrick's Day around the world.
It's the Global Greening Campaign started, I think, 6 or 7 years ago. It was a Tourism Ireland initiative, which has really gathered tremendous momentum. And I think it'd be fair to say that, the Consular Network Department of Foreign Affairs have really got behind this, working with Tourism Ireland right around the world. And it's an opportunity to put a spotlight on Ireland. And as we've seen across North America, we have a lot of iconic buildings turning green. We have the Great Wall of China. We've had the pyramids in Egypt. And it's really, I think, a great recognition of people wanting to be Irish or wanting to reinforce those connections with Ireland. Again, it's got a huge amount of social media traction. And what we've tried to do over the last couple of years is to extend it beyond buildings, but to experiences as well. And in terms of our business, we're saying to people, what are you doing in your workforce? What can you turn green? Your website, your office, your team. Think about Ireland around St. Patrick's Week.
But also, we have to think about the advertising and the projected cost for any. If you wanted to do this on any other occasion, it would be cost prohibitive.
Absolutely. I mean, if we monitor the amount of coverage that this campaign delivers, and it's huge. I mean, we couldn't purchase this kind of coverage in terms of publicity. If you look at what it would cost to buy that in terms of advertising, so it's massive. And the goodwill associated with that, it's gained a lot of traction, and it's become infectious. Everybody wants to get involved. So each year we look to bring on board new attractions. So this year You know, in the US, we have Fenway Park. We've got a Seven World Trade Center. We've got many attractions right across the US, Niagara Falls, and we've got sports teams going green. And listen, it's putting a spotlight on Ireland. It's a time which is a key booking period for us. March is a very important time in the travel planning calendar. So it's a kind of coverage we couldn't buy, and we certainly hope that this will be a campaign that has many years and many legs and many lives left in it.
The summer, as we change seasons, and of course we want to welcome our listeners to spring and the beautiful weather, not only in the United States, but actually Ireland is getting an early spring and an early summer as well. What... how does that affect? Are we back again to the seasonal, affiliation with Ireland?
Well, obviously, our peak season is typically sort of, June, July, August, and September. But what we have seen over the last number of years is a massive increase in traffic in quarter one, so January to March, and also October to December. So our season is extending. And to give you an example, traffic from North America over the last 3 years, between October and December, has grown by 32%. So that's pretty significant.
Incredible,
Traffic during visitors traveling between January and March has grown by 14%. Not quite as strong, but nevertheless, it's improving. It's still, harder convincing Americans to travel in January and February, but it really gets going in March. But we are making, good headways there.
Yeah.
But September and October, very strong months. In fact, September is stronger than August now, and April and May are very good. So the message is resonating that Ireland is a destination for all seasons. There's plenty of things happening.
Absolutely.
And some of the festivals that take place have certainly been a big driver in some of those shoulder months.
And actually, that is it's unique to Ireland in many aspects, because here when we think of in North America, when we think of vacation, despite ourselves, we think of the sun and the summer that's what we think of. But to have a year round and to have destination Ireland is amazing.
It is. People traveling to Ireland are typically not going for the weather, as you know. And if you are, you can get all four seasons in one day. People are going for history, heritage,
that wouldn't
and
be
scenery.
Every day, no.
Not every day. but it can be organised, even if you want. But sometimes I think people often ask, what is the best time to travel? I mean, there's no best time really.
Right.
But I certainly think May, June, September, October are just as good a month as the peak period, and often the weather is better. But people are going for that history and that heritage and that culture, and they're traveling to Europe they're traveling to a lot of European capitals in the shoulder months, London, Paris, Rome. So why not Dublin, Belfast, Galway? And we're beginning to see, as I said before, a big increase in traffic traveling to Dublin, particularly as this is being driven by the increase in air access. But then Belfast is only 2 hours away.
Yeah.
Galway is only two and a half hours away. The road network is so good now.
Fabulous.
That it has really shrunk the island.
What impact does it have? It seems like Dublin is running out of awards on a global level. Number one destination for tourism, number one place to live. And does that take away from, say, your Ireland's ancient East promotion that you have here?
I don't think so. I mean, it's always great to have these accolades, and it's always very positive, but we just certainly don't take things for granted. We don't sit back on our laurels, but I think it would be fair to say that people do want to spend a couple of days in Dublin, generally speaking, but most North Americans want to tour around and want to travel. So for the typical visitor traveling to Ireland, they might spend a couple of days in Dublin, and then they will tour to at least two other regions, possibly three. Many of them would fly into Dublin out of Shannon or out of Belfast, so you have that opportunity to fly into one gateway and out of another. So I don't think it takes away from it. I just think it puts more of a spotlight on Dublin and on Ireland. It's all very positive, and we certainly take all the accolades we can, but I think the important thing is that we don't take them for granted and that we continue to work hard, because it is a very competitive landscape out there. And just because we've seen tremendous growth, which we have, we've had three record years, we can't take it, you know, these businesses are, we're in a cyclical business, and we continue to hold on to that great market share that we've gained, but we have to work hard and we have to make sure we're investing both in the marketplace but also in those great experiences on the ground. So it all helps us, Adrian, and we're certainly going to, the more accolades we can get, the better, but we need to earn them.
Is there a sense of, does the competition now that the new routes and new airlines and the access to Ireland has increased so tremendously, is there a sense from the Aer Lingus and the Delta and those who have invested heavily in the route to Ireland, do they feel somewhat threatened by the continual addition of other airlines coming into their turf?
I think it's fair to say that competition is healthy. Certainly competition is certainly very good for the consumer. I think what we would say is that we've seen a tremendous increase in visitor traffic. Tourism Ireland is a destination marketing organisation. We're charged with our remit is to inspire people to travel to Ireland and create demand. And typically the airlines follow that demand. We've seen a huge increase in air access, and if we look this year from North America, including Canada, there'll be close to 50,000 seats, this one-way seats, leaving 16 gateways. So competition is always good. Competition obviously means that the airlines are very aggressive. But I think if you look at airfares this year, they're very competitive. The strength of the dollar, falling oil prices, you're beginning to see that impacting upon fares that are available. So I think it's very positive, and the feedback we've had from the airlines is that they're doing as well as they would expect, and they can always do better, and we're here to work very closely with them to make sure that as many of those seats that go to Ireland are full.
Finally, I just want to ask you about it's obvious that the effect that social media has changed travel, it has changed so many aspects of our life. Is there still demand for instance, the travel agent, as we used to know the travel agent? Many of them, of course, if we go back a few decades here, the Irish travel agent in terms of numbers and in popularity was somewhere up there around the pub and the restaurant. What happened to the travel agents?
Well, the travel agents are still there, and I think what we've seen, certainly in North America, is there is still a heavier dependency on travel agents and travel professionals here in North America, perhaps versus closer to home destinations like Europe. About 30% of our travellers visiting Ireland use the travel trade, so it's still a very important distribution channel for us. And I think the reason for that is that Americans, when they're traveling to Ireland, they're investing more time and effort and money. They're spending, 8, 9, 10 days, possibly 2 weeks in Ireland. So they want to make sure that the trip that they have is the very best. They want to engage professionals and experts that know Ireland. And their financial outlay is greater than if they were traveling from other parts of Europe. So they're very important. I think what you've seen is that the travel professionals that are in business now are the very best. I think it's you have seen a shakeout, but I think what you have is we certainly at Tourism Ireland continue to work with the travel trade. We work with those that typically would have more upscale clientele, those that we feel can influence business. But it's a very important channel still for us. But having said that, social media, as you rightly say, and the access to booking direct has become a lot easier through the online travel agencies and director websites. So a lot of the growth is coming through, is certainly coming through direct sell, people booking on through the OTAs and booking directly with the airlines and the hotels. But there's still good business being booked through the travel trade, and it does tend to be, you know, premium business that is being booked by the travel trade.
There is such a variety of print material that is still, you know, very popular. That didn't go away.
It didn't. I think with the, you know, when the internet came on stream, we thought that would be the end of print. I think now we want to consume things in different ways across different channels. But I think certainly what I like to do, and I think a lot of travellers like to do, nothing beats having a good brochure and a cup of coffee on a Saturday morning.
Right.
You know, I mean, you can consume a lot online, and we would always direct people to Ireland.com. Most of our materials and most of our content is online, but we still have a good array of brochures, and we're willing to, you know, we can obviously send those out to people. But people, you know, holidays are taken in colour. People like to, you know, feel those brochures, look at those great images. And much as we do most of our things online now through our iPhones or iPads, using our smartphone technology, it's still nice to have a paper brochure in your hand sometimes.
And the toll-free number, the live person to talk to, is still very much alive and well.
We certainly still have that number, 1-800-SHAMROCK, or our website. And I would say if anybody's interested in checking out our new community service, again, you can go onto the website and register to become part of our community, and you can pose your questions, and you will have live experts from Ireland answer those questions. So experts, locals on the ground that can give you the inside track. It's a new community facility that we just launched a couple of months ago.
Alistair Metcalf, again, your responsibility for North America, Canada, and the United States, again, becoming even a more popular market as each year goes by. Ireland must be doing something right. And, of course, it's helped tremendously by Tourism Ireland, ireland.com.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA.